Case number 195719, Susan Hicks et al. Versus State Farm Fire and Casualty Company. Argument not to exceed 15 minutes per side. Mr. Jacob Kahn, you may proceed for the appellant.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jacob Kahn, and I represent the defendant appellant, State Farm Fire and Casualty Company, in this appeal from the district court's order granting class certification. That order should be reversed. This case involves approximately 7,500 policyholders, each of whom claims that they were paid too little for actual cash value or for ACV. And they claim that because of State Farm's alleged practice of applying depreciation to estimated labor costs when calculating ACV. This court previously held that State Farm's policy does not unambiguously permit labor depreciation. And that was enough to deny State Farm's motion to dismiss. But importantly, this court also held that ACV is, quote, the dollar amount required to restore a policyholder to where he or she was before the loss. That's what the contract provides for, payment of that dollar amount. If this case were tried, then for each claim, the jury would need to decide, was the amount State Farm paid for ACV the dollar amount? Was that less than the required amount? If so, there was a breach. If not, there was no breach. And the jury will need to answer this basic liability question 7,500 times. We submit that the district court abused its discretion in certifying a class in this case. And I'd like to address three issues today.
Mr. Kahn, I'd like to interrupt you first to talk about just the ACV part of it for just a second. I mean, I understand your argument is that you weren't paying them actual, you were paying them estimated. The court's decision deals with actual, not estimated. I get all that. But what I don't get is if somebody did not make the repairs to fix their property so as to trigger the RCV payment, was there any kind of a true-up procedure that State Farm followed to make the estimated payment something different than the final ACV payment?
Judge, are you asking in the normal course of claim handling to State Farm after an initial ACV payment, when no replacement cost benefits are claimed, do they go through a true-up process?
Yes.
The answer is generally no. State Farm calculates an estimated amount for ACV that's based on its initial estimate of what it might cost to complete repairs. You know, that could be varied for any number of reasons. What are the repairs that appear reasonably necessary? What are the prices estimated? And what depreciation is applied? But unless the policy...
The point is, if somebody doesn't contest what the ACV payment was that they received from State Farm, then that's it. That claim handling is over, case is closed, right?
They have, every policyholder has an ability to seek further replacement cost benefits, and I understand your question is
if somebody does not contest ACV and doesn't repair their property, that's it, it's done, right?
The ACV claim at that point is done.
Now, the court told you that you can't deduct depreciation from the labor component of that payment. So I'm having a lot of trouble seeing why this is not a suitable class action as to only the ACV claimants. I'm going to get to RCV in just a second. So just asking you about ACV. You don't go back and take money away from them if you paid them too much. So it's over. And you didn't pay them enough. So I don't understand why this isn't a class action isn't a perfect vehicle, at least as to those claimants.
Sure, Judge. And the reason is I understand we're talking solely about the ACV folks. The payment is based on an estimate. And there's evidence in the record showing that even for folks who got an initial ACV payment, sometimes the payment is overstated. Ms. Hicks, for example.
Do you ever go after them for an overpayment? Do you ever seek it back?
So State Farm does not seek overpayments back. But this case is about policyholders who have claimed years after accepting State Farm's ACV payment is sufficient that it was deficient. And there's no law that we're aware of that binds State Farm to its pre-litigation estimate of what repair costs have been. It has a right to defend, as for example, in the Farrell versus Liberty Mutual case, it has a right to defend the sufficiency of its payment, because the question for is there a breach of the ACV is what was the dollar amount paid, and was that dollar amount representative of the true ACV of the property?
When State Farm had to pay the gap period to the policy holders, it went back in and used its Xactimate and took the difference between those two time frames and paid all 2,000 claims, right, without any challenge.
So not exactly. So there was, you're referencing following the district court's order denying our motion to dismiss, the company made a decision and wanted to adjust claims consistently from that point forward. And there was, as you referenced, a gap period between which it was able to switch its practice to turn off depreciation and the point at which the district court had entered its ruling. So it did go back. It evaluated approximately 3,900 claims. Took about 6.5 weeks, and only roughly half of those were issued a further payment. And that payment, by the way, was not a determination of damages. It was simply another estimate. State Farm, as you noted, turned off the depreciation. There's no way to turn off labor depreciation. What was turned off was all non-material depreciation, which includes, for example, equipment items. But it was an effort to get it to address the court's ruling. And it was not a determination as to, well, this payment upon reflection was overstated initially, so we're not going to issue further payments. And only approximately—
So you didn't go back and examine that, you simply paid them.
In that instance, yes, we made a supplemental payment where it was determined that there were still costs that had been initially paid on an ACV basis and not yet paid on a replacement cost basis.
Well, everybody gets an ACV payment, right? It's not one group and the other group. The first phase of analysis under your policy is to go find the ACV value and make a payment to the policyholder, right?
The policy does set up two steps, ACV and replacement costs. There are certain instances, and we have them in the record here, and there's no way to find them but for a claim-by-claim review, where State Farm prepares an estimate and in fact makes a payment not for ACV, but for full replacement costs up front with no depreciation. And those are claims you can't determine.
But then you treat that as the full payment under the policy, right? If you pay that to somebody and they don't go out and spend it and repair their house, you don't ever come back against them. Isn't that correct?
State Farm does not, if it's issued an ACV payment, it encourages policyholders to repair. If they repair, sometimes they come back and seek replacement cost benefits.
But the question is, do you ever make them repay that if they don't use it? And the answer to that is no, right?
The answer is no, except that it does impact in the event they come back and seek further payment for RCBs. And they've already been paid their full cost to repair. State Farm doesn't issue a further payment. And the same cost to repair cap exists on the ACV provision. So if a person came back and said, well, my repair costs were less, so I realize I don't get replacement cost benefits, but I don't think your ACV payment was sufficient. The cost to repair cap in the policy says you're only entitled to get your cost to repair or replace. That's sort of the overarching obligation at the front of the loss settlement provision.
I guess what I'm understanding your explanation. I know we keep on moving into the second phase payment, but I think Judge McKeague's question was about the first phase payment. And so if your argument is that there is this problem with the RCD part of the payment, then are you suggesting that we then create a circuit split, since both the Fifth and the Eighth Circuit have basically used this kind of methodology with the State Farm claims? Is that not correct?
So I don't think it's correct.
The Eighth Circuit uses exactly the same class definition, doesn't it?
The Eighth Circuit, I think you're referring to the Stewart decision. Stewart decision post-stated the In Re State Farm Fire and Casualty Company case, the LeBrier case. And Stewart recognized the prior unanimous decision decertifying a labor depreciation class in LeBrier and distinguished its case from LeBrier on two grounds. It referred to them as two critical differences, neither of which, by the way, is present here. And the two differences were, first, that Arkansas law, which governed the Stewart case, expressly prohibited labor depreciation. You couldn't even provide for it in your policy. That's different than Kentucky law, as this court held. State Farm's policy is ambiguous. It could provide for labor depreciation if it so chose. And there may be situations under the exception under the ACV regulations where, in fact, labor depreciation may be appropriate. So that was one distinction Stewart drew from LeBrier. And the second was the policy expressly identified how the methodology was going to be applied. LeBrier merely stated that ACV would be paid. That's what is stated in the policy that's at issue here. So, in fact, if you're going to defer to a ruling, we would suggest you defer to the LeBrier decision, which is a more persuasive analysis.
Despite the law that was governing in LeBrier?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the
despite
beginning.
Despite the different law that governed in LeBrier.
Right, in LeBrier.
That's the distinction that Stewart made.
It distinguished both the law and the fact the policy specifically provided for how the payment was to be, the methodology. There's no such methodology in the policy here. And the policy, okay. The law.
I think that answers my question. I believe your time's up. Thank you.
Whoa.
I'm sorry.
I've been trying to ask
you guys some questions.
I've been trying to ask a question about RCV. So if we move away from ACV to RCV, there's an initial ACV payment, whether it's an actual or estimated, I'm just going to ignore for a minute. They then make the repairs. If they haven't gotten enough to fully reimburse them, then you make a final payment. And that final payment does not have any depreciation deducted for labor or materials, correct?
That is correct.
So your argument is that RCV customers never had depreciation deducted from what they were paid at a time when they were entitled to get that payment. Is that basically it?
No, the argument is, we'll assume for purposes of your question, this is somebody who initially had an ACP payment, fully recovered replacement costs, like Ms. Hicks, for example. She has, as a result of that, recovered all she was entitled to under the policy, which is the full cost to repair. And your question about the RCV claims.
That's my point. She ended up getting the full amount, including the amount that was previously deducted from the estimated payment.
That is correct.
So would I be right in assuming that that may well be why this does, what this court did here is not, what you're asking does not create a circuit split with respect to the Fifth Circuit, because the Fifth Circuit case doesn't include RCV for this reason. It's only an ACV case.
That does appear to be the one of the distinctions that Fifth Circuit drew, and as you know, this case
and the Eighth Circuit case made a specific finding that's absent in this case with respect to ACV. Am I right about that?
I'm not sure what you're referencing the specific one.
All right.
The Eighth Circuit and Stewart did determine in that case that there was a breach of the methodology in the policy, as opposed to in the LeBrier case, an underpayment, which is the heart of the claims in this case. I do see my time is up. I'm happy to answer a question if you
have answered the question. Thank you.
Thanks very much.
All right, we'll hear from you, Mr. Peterson.
Thank you. Eric Peterson from Mayor Fairbanks and Peterson for plaintiffs appellees Susan Hicks and Don Williams. We practitioners frequently gloss over the standards of review due to our excitement to get into the meat of our argument. But here it's important to focus on the standard of review, the abuse of discretion standard. And to satisfy that standard, State Farm would have to show that the district court made a clear error of fact, an error of law, misapplied the correct legal standards when reaching a conclusion, or made a clear error of judgment. This is an exceedingly difficult task for State Farm here, where, as the judges have been discussing, both the Eighth Circuit in Stewart and the Fifth Circuit in Mitchell affirmed class certification. So there's two unanimous panels and two district court judges that have agreed with Judge Wilhoit here. And in fact, during the oral argument in Mitchell, the Fifth Circuit panel asked State Farm, has any court in the country applying the RCV less depreciation equals ACV methodology, has any court declined to certify a labor depreciation class? State Farm answered no. And since that oral argument in Mitchell back in October of 2019, there have been two additional class certification decisions on labor depreciation. First is the Fifth Circuit opinion affirming the trial court in Mitchell. And second, just less than 2 weeks ago, the Western District of Arkansas entered final approval and certified a settlement class of Stewart. So there, the district court found that that class met all of the standards of Rule 23A and B3, but for trial manageability.
Mr. Peterson, am I right, as I was discussing with Mr. Kahn, that the Fifth Circuit case does not include RCV issues?
Well, partially, Your Honor. The class there, the class that was presented to the district court did not include policyholders who recovered full replacement cost benefits. It does include folks who recovered partial replacement cost benefits. So an example there would be somebody whose gutters and their roof was damaged, and they only replaced their gutters. And so State Farm only released the depreciation for the gutters, but not the roof. Those people would still be in the Mitchell class. Does that answer Your Honor's question?
Well, it does. But my problem here is not ACV, as you might have gathered from my conversation with Mr. Kahn. The question is, did the district judge here do the rigorous analysis that he was required to do with respect to both types of claimants here, the ACVs and the RCVs? And it seems to me, and this is what I'd like you to respond to, that he simply combined them together and did not appreciate the difference between the two different types of claims, and the fact that even if depreciation was improperly withheld in the estimated payment in the RCV case, that depreciation got paid back in the final payment.
I think that the district court did address that, and those two groups of people, they both suffered the injury that their labor costs were depreciated. In the
and
example,
if you're an RCV person and you got that money at the end, where is the contractual responsibility to have paid you a higher ACV payment in the interim?
The contract requires that actual cash value be paid after the loss. It doesn't require you to actually replace or repair before you receive it.
Well, it doesn't require them to give you an estimated payment either, does it? They simply choose to give an estimated payment up front.
They don't choose to. They're required to make an actual cash value payment soon after the loss.
The word estimate is not in the policy.
Well, that's right. But the word estimate is not in the policy. But so, neither is the word actual.
So they do an estimate and they screw it up. So assume that's the case. If they make good on that screw up at the end, where is there a violation of the policy?
The violation is that the actual cash value benefits are owed under Kentucky law. They need to be paid promptly after the claim is submitted. So after the loss, they don't need to wait until replacement is made or repair is made. And so that person was owed the actual cash value payment. State Farm has conceded it owes it. When it pays it, it makes that payment. And for somebody in the example I understand you to be using, Your Honor, that person's damage is the time value of money for during the period of time that State Farm improperly held that money. And that's the interest theory.
Has any court bought that theory?
I think that those claimants are part of the Stewart class.
Has any court spoken to this time value of money where you still have a cause of action, even though you got paid everything that you were entitled to, including depreciation at the end? I'm not arguing with you. I'm just asking you, has any court said that?
We cite a couple of cases in our brief the outside of the labor depreciation context, Your Honor, that do stand for the proposition that that folks who only would be entitled to interest under a damages calculation have cognizable claims for breach of contract and are entitled to recover those damages. And this is a formula case, and it's both Stewart and Mitchell recognize that it's a formula case. And the formula, the ease with which the formula can be applied is best demonstrated by the the labor depreciation refund program that Judge Stranch addressed earlier with Mr. Kahn. There, and in fact, there's a screenshot of the steps for that labor depreciation program. It's the same program that State Farm utilized in Kentucky, Alabama, and Missouri. There's a screenshot at page 20 of the United Policyholders amicus brief that shows the steps. And all that State Farm does is toggle off depreciate non-material and depreciate removal and rerun the estimate and compare the first improper estimate where labor was depreciated with the estimate after those are toggled, and they pay their policyholders the difference. This formula really is that simple. And that's why, and State Farm has conceded in Mitchell and here in this case, that it takes at most 15 minutes per claim to do this analysis. And that includes actually issuing a check to their insureds. So it's a straightforward analysis that Judge Wilhoit addressed in his class certification order. And State Farm's actual cost defense, it's best summed up in State Farm's opening brief. There, at page 29, State Farm writes that the policy provision capping the ACV obligation at the policyholder's actual cost of repairs necessitates additional individualized inquiries. The word actual appears nowhere in State Farm's actual cash value provision of its policy. State Farm is not capped. The policy doesn't cap the actual cash value benefits at actual repair costs at all. It says repair costs. And that's consistent with how State Farm ran its labor depreciation refund programs in all of the states it's done it. It's consistent with the documents, State Farm's documents that show that State Farm pays actual cash value benefits before repairs are made. So there's a temporal element too. Actual cash value payments are prospective. You make those before you know what actual repair costs are will be. And in the example of someone who didn't make any repairs, there never are actual costs. Yet State Farm, of course, still owes those actual cash value benefits. In contrast, replacement cost value benefits are retrospective. You have to look at the money that was actually spent to recover those benefits.
You didn't mean to say, did you, that you still get replacement cost if you don't make the replacement? In other words, the repairs?
If I said that, I certainly misspoke. You do have to make the repairs to recover that amount. But if you do not make repairs, or make lesser repairs. For example, if you had a slate roof and you replaced it with a shingle roof, you're still owed the actual cash value properly calculated for that slate roof. And the State Farm's actual cost defense also is inconsistent with the fact that State Farm has admitted and conceded here that it never seeks that money back. If it claims it made an overpayment in the actual cash value payment, it never seeks to recover that money. And it's also inconsistent with this court's law in Parkway, where this court held that actual cash value benefits, actual repair costs don't affect a policyholder's right to recover actual cash value. And the Sixth Circuit noted in Parkway, even if a policyholder chooses not to repair, you still are entitled to those benefits. That law is consistent all around the country. The 11th Circuit held the same in Mills. And in fact, the Alabama Supreme Court in the Ponder case said that State Farm's position that it took in Ponder, which is identical here, that your actual cash value is capped at your actual repair costs, even if you're replacing with something substandard. The Alabama Supreme Court held that that would make a mockery of actual cash value coverage, because you would only, if you replaced with something substandard, like the policyholder did in Ponder, where he replaced his house with a much smaller house, that's all that under State Farm's rejected theory you would recover there.
One other question, I think, Mr. Peterson, you answered me earlier to say that the loss in the actual cash value instance was basically time value of money because you didn't get the full amount that you were entitled to promptly. Am I saying that largely correctly?
Well, that you didn't get it timely.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So the policy doesn't define promptly, I don't think, does it?
I don't believe it does.
Does case law define promptly?
Well, the Unfair Claim Settlement Practices Act in Kentucky does and would require payment when it's conceded that money's owed. It would need to be paid promptly.
Okay. Where I'm going on this, I'm just curious. Let's assume that you make the estimated payment using the computer program. You decide you're going to replace it. You send in the replacement bills, and they pay those and basically true up depreciation, and they've then made the second payment promptly. Is there still a loss because the depreciation was deducted improperly from the first payment if you got the full payment within a prompt period of time?
To make sure I understand Your Honor's example, is your example that the policyholder first has labor costs depreciated from the actual cash value payment?
Yes, and that's your class.
Okay. Yes, it is. And then later chooses to replace, and when they submit the replacement costs, they promptly receive payment for the replacement costs. Is that the factual basis for your question?
Okay. Yes, and that ultimate payment then essentially trued up the deduction of depreciation from labor in the actual cash value payment.
It trues it up,
which is what I understand happened here.
Well, it happened with Ms. Hicks. It did not happen with Don Williams.
I'm not trying to trick you here. I'm just asking what I thought was a simple question. If the RCV payment comes promptly, do you still have a time value of money claim because there was labor depreciation deducted from the ACV payment some previously?
Yes. The injury is the time value of money during that period of time between the date the State Farm conceded it owed the claim and made the payment for actual cash value, made the deficient payment, deficient because of the actual cash, because of the labor depreciation being withheld. And then the date that the policyholder recovered that money through the replacement cost value payment.
Okay, thank you. That's what I wondered.
All right, Mr. Khan, you have your rebuttal tab.
Thank you very much, Your Honors. I'd just like to make three very quick points. The first is, State Farm's position here is there was an abuse of discretion. There was not a rigorous analysis of how these claims would be tried, because under Kentucky law, the trial of an alleged underpayment claim is individualized. The Farrell versus Liberty Mutual case that we cite at page 37 of our brief. In that case, the plaintiff claimed they were entitled to more money than they received for ACV. They moved for summary judgment. The defendant showed that, in fact, its ACV payment had been overstated. Summary judgment was denied because there was a factual dispute for trial as to what is the correct ACV. Importantly, in that case, which is consistent with our position as to how these would be tried, in that case, the insurer was not bound to its initial pre-litigation estimate, and its evidence of overpayment was not excluded. Because the issue in every case is, what was the dollar amount paid? Was that dollar amount sufficient? With respect to counsel's arguments regarding the supplemental payment program that State Farm undertook in Kentucky, the key distinction here is those were current claims. This class goes back to 2013. There's an unbelievable amount of time, effort, and complexity in reconstructing what happened. Many of these claims received full replacement cost benefits. Others have submitted payment records, not received replacement cost benefits. And under State Farm's policy, the ACV cap is clear. You can't get more than your, quote, cost to repair or replace for ACV. And finally, counsel referenced this court's decision in the Parkway case. We have submitted a docket 40-2, the policy language in Parkway. Page 46 of that docket entry, 40-2, indicates the clear difference here. That policy said you can recover for ACV. State Farm's policy says we will pay ACV not to exceed the cost to repair. This court has not rejected the plain meaning of the cost to repair language. And in fact, in Judge McKeague's decision in the Hampton case, under Kentucky law, when the policy is unambiguous, the court is to apply the plain meaning of the words chosen by the insurer. We request that this court reverse the class certification decision. Thank you.
We appreciate your arguments and we'll consider the case carefully.